The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot-button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Beyond and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and greatest news, reviews, previews, rumors, and much more in the world of PlayStation. I'm joined this week, before we get into any of it all, by Jada Griffin.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, Jonathan. It's so good to have you back this week.
Thank you. I let the kids run amok last week and I had to come back. I couldn't wait another week and you all did a great job without me. It was a very fun episode to actually listen to on my end.
I definitely would have done a lot more if Mark had it like reined me in.
Classic
definitely.
Mark.
Yeah, that's him, you know.
We're also joined this week by Lucy O'Brien. Lucy, welcome back.
Hello. It is nice to be back. It is
nice to have you here.
An absolute pleasure to be back, especially because I'm playing games that I'm very excited by at the moment, so I can't wait to dive in.
Yes, yeah, we have some big games in the past couple of weeks to catch up on as well, and so that'll be a lot of fun. And also joining us this week is Tom Marks. Tom, welcome back.
Hello. It's been a while.
It has. It's been a while indeed, and I'm excited to have you all here, as we are going to, you know, jump into, obviously, the last few weeks you've heard some of our Horizon, some of our Elden Ring impressions. We have some people who haven't gotten to give those, so we're going to dive into those a little bit later as well, including, you know, this week is the release, I think it's worth mentioning from the top, this week is the release of Gran Turismo 7. Unfortunately, since I was off last week and then coming back now, I didn't get to figure out schedules and plan things, so Luke, who wrote our review, Luke Riley, unfortunately, I couldn't have him on the show this week, but I'm hoping to in a week or two to come. But please go check out his review on IGN or watch the video version on IGN or YouTube. He gave it a 9 and really, really loved it. And Luke is, I think we can all say, is like one of the most, when you think of a car game, you go to Luke. So
I think I could safely say he is the expert on car games.
Yes.
Like globally. He is the guy. He has this incredibly complex brain that is able to sort of figure out what makes one car game different from another car game, which is something that I personally cannot do. But like, if you want the final word on whether a car game, do we even call it car games?
It feels like we're really belittling it in a way when we keep saying car games.
Belittling it, and I'm hammering it home. Go to a Luke Riley review.
Yes.
Sure.
And
I think it's safe to say car games are like Hot Wheels and racing games are like GT.
That works. Is that
yeah. Right. Yes.
That feels
yes.
This is definitely a racing game.
It's a car game.
It's a car game, and you can go check out Luke's review of it in the meantime before we're able to have him on. Please go check that out. Of course, Gran Turismo 7 launches, I think, this Friday, so people will be able to jump in. And as well as that, this week there is, I think it's this week, though, you could have gotten pre-order the access to it, Babylon's Fall, which is a PlayStation console exclusive. And Jada, I know you've been playing, so we'll talk a little bit later in the show about that as well. So we'll be covering that too. But yeah, just wanted to mention, obviously, for the Gran Turismo fans, just to let you know, Luke isn't on the show this week, but hoping to have him later this month. Also, I owe everyone out there an apology. For the last few weeks, I've been saying, hey, please write in to beyond@ign.com with your questions or comments on the show, and we'll read them. And I hadn't really been seeing any emails. Turns out, because of an email snafu in our backend, I wasn't on the Beyond email thread anymore. So I haven't been getting those emails. I apologize to everyone who has been writing in over the last few weeks. So if you've written in, just go ahead and copy paste it back to beyond@ign.com. I'll get it now. We'll actually be able to read those on the show in the future. But I came back from break and I was like, huh, I just realized I haven't gotten a single email. And so please write into beyond@ign.com and I'll actually get them now to actually read on the show, especially if you've been playing Horizon, if you're going to be playing Gran Turismo, if you've been playing Elden Ring, please let us know and we'll read them on the show. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think that's all the housekeeping out of the way. I think that's all of it. So for now, let's jump into... Yes.
Can I add one thing? Yes. I also want to thank our fourth guest, Tom Marks, from joining us today. Did we introduce Tom?
I intro Tom. Yeah.
Did you?
Oh, now I'm worried. Totally, did I not?
Tom, I totally missed it if I did.
No, I'm just low key.
I was like, did
you just entirely sort of like blank a big section of the podcast?
I'm just one of those forgettable faces. It's fine.
No, Tom. I haven't said anything yet.
It's okay.
It's probably because Tom and I podcast so much together as it is.
That you know
just,
what?
It's just innate.
I think he did say that and I blinked. So I apologize. I derailed the show. Thank you. And I'm just going to turn off my camera now. And you guys have a good little three-person show.
We'll talk to you later, Jana. Bye. Well, let's get into it. And before we do, of course, I do want to say welcome to Tom. Tom, it's great to have you here.
Thank you for finally acknowledging my presence. I appreciate that.
Happy to do it. Tarm, it is your name. Anyway. I did want to talk this week because we're getting into... Oh, no, Tom is gone. Tom just... Yep, he's... I did want to get into and talk a little bit about, because we are sort of approaching... It's a bit of a quiet news time for PlayStation. And when this happens, sometimes it's easy to fall into like, oh, no, what's PlayStation got going on? We know PSVR 2 is in the works. We've seen the headset last week. We have all these rumors and reports on a new beefed up sort of Game Pass competitor. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. But we're in that quiet gap where we don't know any actual facts about these things from PlayStation. We're waiting on official word. It is, I will say, for those who don't follow these things, March is the end of most people's fiscal year. And so we're going to get a lot of reports at the end of March or early April about how companies have been doing for the year. And there's kind of no better time to tell your investors, hey, here's all the exciting stuff we have going on. That's especially why you see a lot of games come out before the end of March to be able to hit that fiscal year and make it seem good at the end. But so we're kind of going to get into the rest of the year, and that means we're going to hopefully learn a lot soon. And one of the things that we're hoping to learn about is that beefed up PlayStation Plus successor, whatever it's called right now, the code word that we've seen flying around from GamesBeat and Bloomberg and things is Project Spartacus is kind of the code word for it right now. And we've been operating under the assumption from a Bloomberg report from a few months back that it was going to be revealed in the spring. Well, we're getting toward the spring. It's a couple weeks away. We're getting to the end of this fiscal year and the beginning of a new one. So we're kind of expecting something to happen. And alongside that expectation comes a new report from GamesBeat about sort of the alleged three actual tiers of what Spartacus is. So right now, as we know it, these are, again, all unconfirmed details and are subject to change. Obviously, once PlayStation announces things, it could be very different. Right now, there are three tiers priced at $10 per month, $13 per month, and $16 per month. The base tier is essentially PlayStation Plus. It gets you the monthly free games and, you know, online access, things like that you expect from PS Plus. The second tier would be those free games, as well as a game catalog, allegedly, of hundreds of older downloadable games. According to the most recent report, it essentially seems like PlayStation took the PlayStation Now library and just kind of plunked it over into the PlayStation Plus side of things. And then the premium, you know, top tier, $16 a month, would include both of those things, as well as streaming capability, so you could stream games instead of having to download them. There will be allegedly a library of classic games, which I'm not quite sure what the difference would be from the downloadable games, but I assume more looking back at the PS1 through PS3 eras, as well as the ability to do game trials, which is something we saw PlayStation testing, I think, last year, where they were essentially letting people play the first like 4 or 6 hours of a game as a trial. And so that seems like it's going to be baked into this tier as a thing. Obviously, again, just to preface that, all of those details might change. The tiers might switch. The pricing might switch. Some of it might be completely wrong. Some of it might be absolutely right. We just don't know until PlayStation announces it. But it feels like we're getting closer and closer to this being a thing, especially with PlayStation Plus this month having Ghost of Tsushima Legends, which is a pretty big first-party thing to put in there, and PlayStation Now getting a game day and date with Shadow Warrior 3, which doesn't always happen on PlayStation Now. So all of that preamble out of the way, I just wanted to sort of set the stage, and then I'm going to throw it all of you, and Jade, I'll start with you. What do you think of the potential for these three tiers? Does that scheme excite you as a, like, would you be interested in paying $16 a month for all of those things, or $13 a month for the basically PS Now and PS Plus combined?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on the fence for PS Now for so long because there's a lot of good games on there that I just can't seem to commit to PS Now because I have so many other games to play currently. So I guess maybe the fact that it wrapping into my current subscription that I'm already paying for with Plus a little bit more extra a month, I guess it's the same thing, but it's not two separate subscriptions. I don't know. It's one of those things where, yes, I'm excited for it. Yes, I'm hoping that some of this stuff is true. The price point seems okay. It seems fine. It'll be interesting to see what it looks like for the year and like the 3 month cards and stuff like that. Cause what is it currently? Isn't it like not $10 a month already for Plus as it is? And then it's, 15 for, or what is it? It's $10 a month and then like 25 for 3 months and then 60 for the year.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how those conversion rates kind of swap between the different versions. If you're able to buy full years, or if you have to do month to month, if you're doing like the middle plans or something like that, it'll be interesting to see how that kind of develops.
Yeah, I think Game Pass Ultimate, which is kind of obviously the elephant in the room, is, you know, this seems like somewhat of an answer, obviously, to the excitement around Game Pass that has been brewing and only growing, I think, for years now. I think it's $15 a month, so that premium tier would put it kind of right in that space. Mm-hmm. Lucy, I'm curious to hear what you think, because we've talked a lot about the show in the past of, like, why don't they just put PS Plus, PS Now together, and it seems like it's finally happening. But do you feel like that structure is enticing enough for people who, like Jada, have been waiting? You know, like, is that something that you would pay more for those extra tiers?
Yeah, I mean, you know, yes, I suppose so. The ease of the back catalog coupled with, you know, just a more easeful subscription model would be great, because right now PS Now and PlayStation Plus is just it isn't streamlined at all. So I do like the idea of streamlining it. The thing that I'm sort of a bit confused about is the mega super souped up subscription model, which gives you, like, essentially it's like a time demo, right? Like EA does, you get a certain amount of time and then you have to go and buy the game, and that's great. That is great. I think that's a fantastic, like, incentivizing thing for them to do. But at the same time, it's still really hard to justify that price point against Game Pass, which offers you the entire game. You know, it's just like that's a difficult pill to swallow. Like, I do think it's smart from a business standpoint. But when you're looking at what Game Pass is offering with the full game day and date at around the same price point, getting a trial is not as it's just not quite as good, right? And totally. And so for me, I'm a little bit like, it would be really interesting to see if that model is accurate, A, and B, if it evolves at all. You know, like, for example, could they do a sort of a digital drop type thing? So the game comes out, you play the trial, and maybe like a month down the line, you get the whole experience, you know, for like a month, right? Yeah. Like, you know, maybe that could be the evolution of it. Like, I'm just really confused at what they think, if this is accurate, at what, you know, they think the general sort of response is going to be. Because people are going to compare this to Game Pass. Like, it is absolutely that is going to happen. So all of this is good stuff, and like it's positive, and I'm pleased that they're doing it. But at the same time, like when you look at that PlayStation Plus premium package, that's a mouthful. you really got to sort of weigh it up against what Game Pass is offering right now.
Yeah, because the unspoken thing I think of this is, as you were alluding to, Lucy, Xbox Game Pass, you get Xbox first party games day and date. And now that they've bought so many companies, that's a lot of games that you'll potentially be getting day and date on the service without paying. Everything that we've been operating under the assumption, at least so far, and obviously this might change, but like we're assuming PlayStation Plus, whatever they call it, is not going to have PlayStation games day and date, is just the assumption here. Sony does love those day one launches, does love being able to tout how many copies Horizon or God of War or Uncharted has sold, and they don't seem eager to change those sales into subscription numbers at the moment.
Yeah, and you know, I get that, again, first party is so important to them, and there is a certain like degree of prestige around, as you say, like a first party launch, and it's a big part of why people buy PS5s, right? Like they want to play those first party games. Yeah. But on the other hand, yeah, people are going to compare those two subscription models, and it's going to be a tough pill to swallow for some, I think.
You know what's going to would really excite me? If I get access to all the digital games I bought on my PSP, my Vita, and my PS3, like if I got access to those digital games in that top tier premium pass, that would be amazing, because I have so many digital games that I just can't really access or access in a meaningful way, I should say, other than returning to those previous consoles and having to boot them up and load them up. Like, I would love to be able to go back and play some of my downloadable titles from then. That would be awesome.
Yeah, and just a little bit more respect for the back catalog would go a long way.
Yeah, right? 100%.
Yeah, that's the hope here in time. I'm curious about your thoughts of it, as especially, I think, at least more than myself and Lucy, Jada, I don't want to speak for you on the PC side, but as someone who I think, Tom, plays probably a little bit more PC games than the two of us, at least. This sort of library access, like that isn't a thing that people worry about with Steam. I can still go play a game I bought a decade plus ago on my Steam library and play it, as long as it's supported pretty well. PlayStation has had this thing where backward compatibility has not been a thing. So, you know, other than the last generation. So it will be nice to get all of that back, because the PS3 did have those back catalogs on it, and then they just suddenly removed that. But I guess I'm curious, like, to it, from your point of view, is that an exciting incentive for a subscription service like this? Is it more sort of just like is there a worry that it is gating access to old games behind having to pay for a subscription model? Like, how do you feel about that?
I mean, that's a big question, right? Because like that dips into the conversation of like games preservation in a big way, in terms of like, you can also look at, you know, Nintendo's recent announcement that they're just like turning off the Wii U basically, and like all those games are going away, and like I think that is an interesting sort of larger issue. This is a good like Band-Aid solution in my eyes, and I think a lot of what these like reported details like say to me is that Sony is realizing they need to add more value to their subscription service in some way, because Game Pass is such an, like, it's on the tip of everyone's tongue whether you love it or hate it, right? Like it is making waves within the industry, and I think this is absolutely a step forward in terms of them trying to add more value to their own service. And the classic games, right, I see as a nice little way to do that. Nintendo has that thrown into their own online service as well, and you can go back and play these Super Nintendo games or whatever, and they're adding to that. So I think this is a good thing for sure, that Sony is taking steps. I don't really see it as like the end of the be all end all of what they need to be doing, right? I think they will eventually need to do more, and I have faith that they might eventually do that, but this is like a step along that path. Also, one thing that jumps out to me that I did want to just say is like Lucy's point about the game trials being compared to like day one stuff is totally, I think you're hit the nail on the head there. But then on top of that, like I appreciate that game trials are part of this, and I understand that these game trials are longer than most demos, But like, I don't want to normalize the idea that we should be paying for demos, right? Like,
totally.
Demos yeah. used to be like a very normal thing and a very frequent thing, and are have been coming back to a certain extent in recent years for some games. But like, the idea that you can't try a game at all unless you're already paying them money is like annoying in a world where games are $60 and going up and money is tight for a lot of people, right? And I don't like the idea that the fact that game trials might be included in this is great and cool and that rocks, and I love that they are a little more extensive and give you a little more time with the game, but also like just do that.
I feel like that
yeah.
don't charge us for demos.
Yeah, I feel like go ahead, Lucy,
no,
please.
Go ahead, Jada.
I feel like if they're going to include game trials, that should be in the very base PS Plus price.
Right.
Like, maybe there's an enhanced version at the top tier. There's an enhanced, like, maybe you get 2 hours at the free so you can actually try it. And then if you pay for the premium, you get, like, 5 to 10 hours, you know, of the trial or whatever. Maybe not 10, because some games you can beat that fast and there would be people who do it, but yeah, I think it should be at the base price if it's going to be anywhere in the subscription service.
Yeah, it is. You're so right, both of you are so right. Like, you know, the idea of paying for a trial that incentivizes you to pay for the full game sounds it's not a great it's not ideal, you know.
Yeah, you're getting other things.
I agree with both of you,
but yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's as you had said, Tom, it feels like a band-aid to kind of like start the process of yeah. living up to things. And I think you
and I don't want to belittle that step. Right.
Sure.
Like, I do think that this is very encouraging what they're doing here. If all this comes to fruition. Right. I do think that is very encouraging. And I think that they are doing a good job of providing a lot more value to if, again, these sort of things are correct and the prices are right, still a fairly reasonably priced thing, even at the top tier, right? Yep. In terms of the world of subscriptions. But yeah, like I think this is me saying like, good, Sony, this is good. Keep going, right? Like,
yeah,
keep going.
Yeah, it's sort of, I'm hoping it's going to be like a soft launch that it like evolves relatively quickly.
Right.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest question marks is going to be what those libraries end up being, both the one that is the hundreds of games and then the classic libraries. Like, I assume to me, classic libraries spells PS1 through PS3. We're going to give you all the PlayStation classics that you've been asking for. Like, here are the ways you can play old Resistances and Ape Escapes and
Jet Moto.
Yes. And everything in between that you associate as a PlayStation game from those generations that you haven't gotten yet. Whereas I don't know why I said got it. Whereas the library at sort of the middle tier feels like the Game Pass equivalent. But I do think it's going to come, like, the thing that we often see with Game nice, Red, for anyone who's watching the video version, Red coming in with the B-roll. It's weird because I don't associate PlayStation Now with getting those games day one yet. And so if this is able to do that more, like we're seeing day one launches of a couple games on Game Pass just this month. And granted, it's not the biggest games in the world, but like forgive me, Tom, I'm blanking on the subtitle because I keep forgetting. Changing Tides. I wanted to keep saying Lone Sales, but that's the first game.
Yeah.
Is coming to Game Pass, I believe, day one. Young Souls, another indie, is coming to Game Pass day one this month.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and then they're also getting Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, just 4 or 5 months after it was out on there. We haven't seen that at a constant cadence with PlayStation, but I think that's only because PlayStation Plus is only 3 or 4 games at most a month. And at least in the beginning of the PS5's life cycle, we did see a new game kind of debut each month. Like, Bugsnax was free on PlayStation Plus at launch. We saw other games come out.
Destruction All-Stars. Yeah.
So we were seeing that a little bit, but it's like we don't know how much of a volume they can do that at, I think is the big question, and how much they'll want to. But yeah. But I think, like you all have said, it's a good step, but I'm curious what it will actually look like when we get full details. I'm curious if those out there, if you would pay this much money each month for these things, if it's really going to be game dependent for you, if it's going to be a matter of like subscribing to Game Pass Ultimate for 1 month to play there if you have both, and then 1 month on PlayStation because you want to get a game there. We might get into one of those weird scenarios, but Let us know in the comments what you're thinking if you would pay for these tiers to get that stuff. Write into beyond@ign.com, which you can do, and I will see those letters now and let us know what you're thinking about this. I am very curious, especially as we get, I think, closer and closer to the launch of whatever this thing is going to be, how appealing it's going to end up being to the PlayStation audience. Because a lot of people do buy PlayStations for the first-party exclusives and then the biggest of the biggest AAA. And so I'm curious how it will go from here.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Here. Moving on from there, though, to some other news this week that I did just want to briefly mention. Horizon got a patch this morning. The patch notes went up, and it has the most important patch note of all time.
Hold on.
Aloy will stop. Yes.
Honestly, thank God.
I was gonna do a bit, but it's totally fine. I was gonna say I've got these notes, but I've got too much in my bag. I'll send it to my stash.
Which is thankfully what she's gonna stop saying as much as she has. For those, there are plenty of other patch notes. They're addressing UI and graphical issues and audio things and so much more in the game as they're continuing to listen to feedback. There's other stuff they said they even are aware people are upset about that they are going to be looking into. That includes things like I have this problem where fire gleam icons don't remove from your map, even Same. If you've completed them. So they're aware of stuff like that, some specific quests, issues and things like that. They're working on those things. But yes, in addition to many other fixes, Aloy will stop saying, I need to put this in my stash and save
it. I just quickly just go back to the stash thing? Because yes. She says it so often that it it undermines very sort of emotional key story beats sometimes. Like I'll have a moment where, I don't know, something profound has happened or I've just defeated a huge machine and I'm feeling that swell of victory. And then she'll just undercut it by saying, oh, I don't have enough room in my bag. I'll put it in my stash. It's just every single, she says it so much. It's almost like a nervous tick.
Mm.
Like they programmed her to say it so often that it feels like it's some kind of
a
mental issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a manifestation of something. It could be read that way to a certain extent, which is, I think, actually speaks kind of to the characterization they've done with the character and how deep and into Aloy's psyche we do get in this game. But yeah, well, sure, it is very...
but I'd prefer she see a therapist than say, yeah, I need to put that in my stash every...
I mean, in a certain
point
sense, you are
for a second. That's true. That's very true.
It also does kind of unintentionally, hilariously call attention to a like immersion breaking aspect of the game, which is that you are like picking berries and they're magically going to a box, right? Like, mm-hmm. which is a thing that happens in so many video games and you don't ever really care about. But the fact that she calls attention to it so frequently means that you're like, yeah. Wait, what?
Like, yeah, it's like, what is this? This item delivery service, like how is this getting from point A to point B? I don't get it. Like
it is a very funny thing that I think, especially the problem with it is because you're often picking up those health berries to recharge your health. That's probably one of the most frequent things you're picking up. And that seems to trigger that line of dialogue the most.
Yeah.
That, and like wood for your bow and arrow. So it is wonderful that that is being changed. I know that's been annoying for a lot of people. So hopefully it's a little less consistent as you're continuing to explore the Forbidden West. Hopefully you get to hear all the other very good dialogue in the game instead. Because as Lucy said, it sucks when you're in the middle of a conversation with someone, they're trying to tell you a cool thing you like about the game, and then it's like, oh, but I shouldn't have been picking up these berries, I guess.
Yep. And it's like, focus on the... It's Aloy's way of saying you should focus on this one thing at a time. Focus on the conversation. I am the objective in your mission right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do, when we talk about what we're playing, I do want to, you know, sing a lot of Forbidden West praises, because there are so many things I love about that game. But I do want to say that, like, one jarring thing about jumping from Forbidden West to Elden Ring was that Elden Ring's protagonist is so quiet, and it's actually a little bit of a relief compared to the constant chatter that comes from Aloy. So
I think there's a middle ground that they could have met.
Yes, there is a middle ground.
But you're right.
And hopefully with this patch, it will be less, as we've all said, jarring.
Exactly. But yeah, just for those out there who maybe have been having that issue, as it seems we all have with the repetition of all that, just so you know, that's now hopefully going to change soon. In addition to that, if you're wondering a little bit more about the world of Ghostwire Tokyo, obviously that's coming out at the end of the month and is another big PlayStation console exclusive. We'll hopefully be talking about that. I'm very excited for that one. If you want to learn a little bit more about it, there's currently free for download a Ghostwire Tokyo visual novel prelude. It's essentially kind of gets you into, I think, how the world of Ghostwire ended up as it is. It's a visual novel, so again, it's not like some crazy action, you know, equivalent to the game, but it is more of a, like, getting into the story, getting into the world, getting to know this group of characters that are there. I really think the art style for it looks really cool. You can play it both on PS4 and PS5, even though Ghostwire will only be on PS5, which is sort of funny, but you can give it a try if you're interested in learning a little bit more about the world. I didn't get a chance to play it before the show, so I don't know how it is, but I just think this world looks awesome. I don't know about all of you, Jade. I know we've talked about it a little bit recently, but like, it just seems like a really cool world. So to get to learn more about it is a pretty cool opportunity for me.
Yeah, no, I think it looks like it's a great way to introduce. And I think the idea of putting it on PS4 for PS4 users is to kind of give them something else, another game to add to the stack of list of games that they want to consider picking up day one when they pick up their PS5. You know, it's one of those things, like, they're trying to get their hooks into as many people as possible with this game. Rightfully so. It looks fantastic. I've really loved the art style and everything for it. I still just need to actually feel the gameplay in my hands before I can get all aboard the hype train for it. But it's definitely growing on me as time passes. The hype train is calling to me.
Well, is it leaving the station though, Jada?
I haven't decided yet. I haven't decided if I'm buying a ticket yet. That's the thing. I'm at the turnstile, just waiting. It's waiting for me to put my money in.
You're probably holding up a lot of people then if you're just at the turnstile.
You know,
she's making up her mind.
It's one of those things. So, you know, some people can make a decision instantly. Some people toil away for months just sitting there having food delivered while you're waiting in the front of the line.
Just like sh**ing and pissing because you're not like going to the bathroom.
Oh no, no, no! I literally brought my own porta potty. I rented a porta potty to be delivered, and I'm renting it by the hour. It's very expensive.
Okay. It's very expensive. Nearby as well, so you.
Oh yeah, it's got an eyewash station, so I make use of that.
This amazing. Is not where amazing conversation.
I want to stretch this metaphor so far. This metaphor is going to be our thing now, Jada.
Yes, let's do it.
Yeah. I don't. It sounds like you just built an apartment at the train station. So I'm excited for your new lifestyle.
A little shelter, a little tent, a porta potty. Nice.
Some people just wait for the train ticket to go on sale. So you could have just done that, probably.
Yeah, probably.
But anyway, Ghostwire Prelude visual novel is out there. Go ahead and download it. It's for free if you're interested in that world. And if you're not, well, maybe we'll talk about the game later this month and that may or may not convince you. We'll find out then. Moving on from there, nothing to do with bathroom situations at train stations. I just wanted to briefly mention, though, perhaps the bathroom situation in Las Vegas is not the best. PlayStation won really big at the DICE Awards, which were held this year in Vegas last week. Just to mention, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart won 4 awards and Returnal won 2. So congrats to both those games on those awards. For those who don't know, DICE is one of the more industry focused awards. It's voted on by peers in the industry. So it obviously is a really big, meaningful thing for a lot of the devs to win there. And so it's awesome to see those two teams celebrated amongst a bunch of other really great games that were awarded this year. And speaking of DICE, Housemarque gave sort of a general interview to the press, worth briefly mentioning. There is like zero detail, so I'm not even going to pretend that like we got all the juicy scoops on this. But Housemarque said they are working and ideating in the very early concept phases of their new game, which they're looking at as a new IP, which presumably means it's not a Returnal sequel. I don't think that's the biggest surprise to me. I don't see Returnal as a game that was built to be, a 6-7 game franchise, but I do love that world. And if we get some DLC for it, I would not be mad at all. But I don't know any Returnal or Housemarque fans in particular on the panel if you're looking forward to anything from Housemarque specifically going forward after Returnal. But
I mean, I'm just glad, like, I liked Returnal, right? But I'm kind of just glad that a team that is seemingly this creative can just do whatever they like, do what they want to do and explore a new place and build new worlds, because clearly they do a very cool, interesting, unique job at it. And so I sort of almost prefer just seeing like what they can cook up next compared to just more of that world necessarily.
Even it's if I did nice enjoy also, it. Yeah, yeah. And it's always nice just to see developers be able to like stretch their wings a little bit and not be tied into making sequel after sequel of a successful IP, right?
Yeah, it's definitely different from where the industry was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, it was like, nope, you're making Resistance 2, you're making Resistance 3, and I love the Resistance game, so I'm not putting anything down it, but like you definitely could feel that like companies get very kind of like stuck in their ways because of publishers potentially that are just like, nope, this is what is making money, this is what we are paying you to make. But yeah, I loved Returnal and I'm super excited to see what it's going to have in the next one, and what like gameplay mechanics they're going to carry over to the next one. Like, is it going to be this kind of roguelike game again, or are they going to do something different? Like, I'm all in day one, preemptively seeing what it is. If it's something that obviously it's just like, you know, I don't know, maybe not, but like based on my love for Returnal and the 87 hours it took me to get the platinum looking for those dang glyphs, I'm very cautiously optimistic and ready for their next game.
Yeah, it's exciting to see them be given that freedom, like you all were saying. And yeah, like Housemarque clearly has this arcade DNA in them that they've been doing for so long. And it's something that I've loved and been drawn to since I think I first played Super Stardust. So it's I have no doubt that they'll probably continue along those lines. But Returnal did really feel like step one for them getting to evolve it, with all of that stuff. And the fact that, as you're always saying, like, Sony is just letting them do what they want. They were acquired to be able to do those games and not to do something different is really cool to see. And so hopefully continues with whatever their next game is. And I just hope we don't have to wait like 5 years because I just want more games from them. They're very good at making games.
Yep.
Anyway, last but not least, just on the news front to let people know, if you're a big Resident Evil fan, RE2 remake, RE3 remake, and Resident Evil 7 will be getting a PlayStation 5 patch later this year, as well as on Xbox Series. Free upgrades for existing owners, so you'll be able to get that. They'll have visual enhancements for the new consoles, and if you already own it, you'll obviously just get that for free. Again, just a really cool thing to see that includes ray tracing, high frame rate, and 3D audio. The PS5 versions will also utilize the DualSense, haptic feedback, and adaptive triggers, though, of course, that means we'll have to see how they are when that stuff comes out. But yeah, that's a really cool incentive to play what were three very beautiful and fun games on the last gen, and to have them sort of come up to parity a little bit more. They're all relatively short, and I know we have some RE love on this panel, so I'm taking it as a good excuse to go back to these.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to let those RE fans know out there. And whenever, hopefully, we get Village DLC, I'm just waiting for them to announce whatever the hell that's going to be. But that gets us through the news for the week. Just wanted to give you some of those small updates on things. Let's get into what we've been playing. And I do want to talk, Tom and Lucy, to both of you about both Horizon and Elden Ring, respectively, on what you've been playing of those. But I do want to start, because it is obviously one of the launches this week. Jada, I do want to start with your thoughts on what you've been playing of Babylon's Fall so far this week. I'm ready for
it. It's rough. It's rough, y'all. I went into it very open-minded. I was like, this could be really cool. Co-op and a platinum game. Platinum Games game. I'm really excited for like fast-paced combat, playing with my partner and other friends. It does not feel like it has any of the Platinum Games DNA other than just the oddness of like the characters. Like, that is something Platinum Games is like known for. Their characters are very out there and very unique and very different from the rest. And it definitely has that, but playing it on the PS5, graphically, it's just not up to snuff with anything else I've played on the PS4. And then it's just the character creator is an atrocity. I'm hoping, because it's just a trial, I'm really fingers crossed because of the trial, that there's more options coming to the character creator. But the darkest skin tone that I could make for my character look like a white person who just got a tan, and I'm not saying that is any type of like this towards white people who get tans, because do you, but I couldn't make a character in my image, and that really hurts when I want to feel represented in my game by my character that I'm going to be spending potentially hundreds of hours with this kind of a looter shooter sword fighter game. Like, I wanted my character to look like me, or what I want them to look like. It doesn't even go to where the point of where like Elden Ring is, where with Elden Ring, yes, it's not the greatest character creator for people of color. But there's so many more tuners and stuff to where I can tweak it and make it better. Like, that's why I ended up rolling She-Hulk for my Elden Ring character, because I was like, you know what? I'm not really enjoying how my character is turning out, so I'm just going to go green. But I couldn't do that with Babylon's Fall. The story felt a little convoluted in the cutscenes just at the start. Combat was cool. It feels really nice when you perfect dodge attacks and you get that time slow. It's really nice for that. I only played it for probably about 5 hours, but that was 5 hours of too much time, I think, for even me. So if you are curious or on the fence, please go try the trial before you drop money on it. I'm sorry, Platinum Games. I'm sorry, Sony. I love most of the stuff you guys drop, but this one just was not it for me. But yeah, I tried to be as positive as possible there, but I think I was negative.
Thank you for taking one for the team, Jada. Honestly, like, this is really good feedback.
Yeah. Co-op fantasy platinum sounds really great to me, and like everything we've seen in the lead up has been I don't know about this one, which is so frustrating, because it feels like it has that potential, and so to hear that it's not, it is sadly not living up to that is just such a bummer, because there is, as you said, like there's pedigree involved here and great teams and the possibility, but it just does not seem to be coming together.
Yeah, one thing I will say, like, that confused me, especially after character creation, is like the second or third cutscene you get, there's a character that is literally darker than me in like real life in the game. So I'm like, the skin texture is there. Why can't I choose this option? Also, the hairstyles were terrible. The hair in these types of games are almost always terrible. That's why they, you know, you see most people wearing helmets unless they have very short, like little buzz cuts like that character there. I don't know if that's considered a buzz cut, whatever that is. I don't wear my hair short, so I don't know what short hairstyles are called. Pixie cuts. That's one of them. There we go. I know hair. somebody yes, else no, knows. Somebody
to
else
your knows. Point. Yeah, I know. I get what you mean. Yeah.
And also, that's a really good point. You know, I think I am very privileged that for the most part these days, if I want someone to look like me in a character creator, which I usually do, I know some people choose to like go totally different, like totally role playing completely. But I like to generally have my make a character in my image just like better looking. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, this is me.
Yeah.
But you know, I have the options to do that. And I, you know, it is really important that developers consider the breadth of skin tones and hairstyles and hair types and body types and all that sort of thing. Because the world is an extraordinarily diverse place and character creators should always reflect that.
Yep. 100% agree.
Absolutely.
And if we're talking about character creators, just for a moment, because I know we were going to talk a little bit about Elden Ring, but like, is this just me or is Elden Ring's character creator like really hard to make anybody look good at all? Like, not belittling the points Jada specifically brought up.
For sure.
It just is like, every time you move, like, the nose slider, the lips also change, and then you change the cheeks, and then the forehead moves, and it's, like, it's really, like, it's just very, very difficult to make anybody look good in that character creator, in my experience.
I feel like the defaults are, like, really, like, haggard. Mm-hmm. The game encourages you to look like shit.
Right.
Yes.
Which, because they know how much of it you're going to eat playing the game. So they just want you to set them. They're setting the pace.
That thematically makes sense within the world. But also, there are beautiful people in that world that are NPCs. Mm-hmm. So it's not like everyone looks a little off in that world or anything.
Yeah, my girlfriend made my character for me because I just suck at character creators in general. And she spent legitimately an hour and a half working and finessing a character and then moved like one slider wrong and couldn't get it back.
Right.
It just didn't work. And it was like, oh no.
I'm glad that's not only my experience. And that's not to speak ill of the game in any other way. It was just, I was making my character in that game and I was like, this is uncharacteristically difficult.
I spent 45 minutes making my character, and then I turned to the side for the side profile, and her face was just flat. Like, there was just no stuff in shot. I was just like, oh.
Zero chin. Zero chin.
Yeah.
FromSoft is really great for making monsters.
Yes.
Like that is why like the McElroys made the Monster Factory franchise, which I've loved watching those videos, because it's literally just, they're perfect for making bizarre characters, not actual.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. But to go back to Babylon's Fall, I think, you know, Jada, I was talking to you before the show. I've seen the video going around where they have the like limited palette of skin colors, and the one that is, I guess, the closest to a black skin color, they look like they maybe went to the beach for too long for a day, like a white person who went to the beach and got a bad tan. It's really rough.
It's so weird because it starts off as, you know, a very light shade, and then it goes to dark, and then it goes back to light shades again for like the next eight options. I'm like, what reason could you need to go back to light after dark other than just don't put those extra eight in there? Like, it's
it's strange.
It baffles me.
Well, and it's a bummer that the gameplay afterward wasn't at least some sort of a salve for you. It was still frustrating. So it's a bummer to hear. Obviously, you know, go ahead and check out. There's plenty of, I think, a lot of people who have gotten into the early access of Babylon's Fall, because there was like a 3-day early access thing for a lot of people.
There's a free demo up on the store right now, so like anybody can go and download it. Yeah. So
cool. Okay.
See for yourself.
See for yourself, but just be warned. I don't think I have sadly heard much great stuff in general about it. So, Jada, your impressions definitely track with that. But I do want to, of course, talk about the other big games as well that have come out that I want to check in, especially with our guests who haven't been on the show recently. And I guess, where do we want to start? Elden Ring or Horizon? I feel like I need a coin to flip.
Let's start with Horizon.
Let's go there first. Since it's a little older, so
it's a little older. So okay, let's start with
Elden Ring. A week.
A whole week older. Let's start with Elden Ring. Tom, just so I know, have you played much Elden Ring at all yet, or no?
I haven't played a ton, but I have. I think a half dozen hours in, right? Just scratched the surface in terms of what that game is, but enough to have a sense of it.
Cool. Just wanted to check in. Jada, forgive me, remind me from last week. As of the time of recording last week, you had not gotten to play either, right? Or had you?
What, Elden Ring and Horizon?
Or Elden Ring is at the time of recording last week's episode.
Oh, yeah, no. No, I think I had played just a little bit. I hadn't played it on Wednesday. I didn't play it till Friday. So
cool. Good to know. I've spent about 25, 30-ish hours in as well. So I'm just trying to get a sense of where everyone's at. And Lucy, I know you've been playing a ton as well.
Not a ton. I've been talking about it as if I've been playing a ton. No, I'm quite time poor at the moment for various reasons. So I've been playing where I can, which is probably added up to only around 11, 12 hours. So kind of closer to Tom. I still have many thoughts in just that space of time.
That's about where I'm at. I'm about 12 hours in right now because I got in that initial burst, played a bit, and then I was like, I need to go finish Horizon, and then I can fully dive into this world. So
mm-hmm. Fair enough. Well, let's just start with some brief overviews then. Lucy, I know you were saying you have a lot, so let me just start with you. How have you been feeling, especially as I know your Souls fandom, as we've discussed many times on the show? How are you feeling about Elden Ring so far?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, just the caveat that I am a casual Souls fan insofar as, I played around 40 hours of pretty much all of them, aside from Bloodborne, which I finished. So I have, because I'm bad at Souls games, I've kind of bounced off and really enjoyed my time with each of them. No resentment or anything. I just, I put the game down and been I'll come back to that boss later, and then something else comes out and I never go back, right? Because it's very hard to go back into a Soulsborne game if you've bounced off. But what I love about this, and I know that a lot of people have been singing all of what I'm about to say from the rooftops, but it is just incredible at how FromSoft have taken the Soulsborne sensibilities, which are, you know, beautiful, odd characters, incredibly precise, terrifying, creative enemies, the amazing combat and movement, and just this extraordinary world, and taken it from a relatively linear place and just managed to translate that into an open world in a way that doesn't feel like, okay, I guess we'll just put what we do so well in an open world. The open world feels amazing. That is the thing that has rocked me so much. It feels like every single part of it is there on purpose, just like a Souls game, right? In the Souls game, you know that every single piece of the puzzle, every single piece of it is part of a puzzle. And this, it feels the same way in an open world. And that just blows my brains. I just can't believe they managed to do it. I mean, from a development standpoint, it's an extraordinary achievement that, you know, that this huge, huge space can feel so purposeful, and not only purposeful, but just so artful. It feels like this is, you know, I don't want to be a cliche, but it feels like this is an actual piece of art that I am in. It feels like everything is there and someone has put it there. Not like an automated thing, not like part of some kind of programming ecosystem, but someone has gone in and purposefully put that thing in there. And it just makes traversing through this world just the most wonderful delight, because there are so many little surprises, and it does have that FromSoft sensibility. So it is so weird and different and magical, and it looks beautiful. On top of that, it is definitely, I would agree with the people saying it's more approachable than a lot of the Souls games because of its checkpointing system, because of its fast travel, just because of the sheer scope of it. You never feel really locked into one space or one particular enemy. You can always go back after you've leveled up, after you've explored more of the region. It's just the most incredible thing. It's sort of like, for me, I'm like, I can't really gush about it enough. I'm finding it a magical experience. So that's my take on Elden Ring.
I think to your point about sort of the like purposefulness of the world, I think it's because it's also so surprising often at each turn. Like you genuinely, from rough little area to area, you don't know really what you're in for until you go there. And sometimes it is an incredible, wonderful surprise. Sometimes it's a chest that puts you into a crystal cavern that makes you want to throw your controller at the TV because it is insanely frustrating. But other times you figure out how to get through it because a friend comes in to help you. It is like minute to minute. There is a lot of just, I don't know what I'm going to do next, but I want to go check out what that thing could be. Feels like a lot of it. Tom, how have you been feeling about Elden Ring from your time with it so far?
Like I said, I haven't played a ton. Don't have sort of any disagreements. I haven't gotten deep enough into the world to see all those sort of intersecting layers and all that depth. I have always enjoyed the combat of Souls games, but usually fall off of them just because of like it is demoralizing in a way that makes me put the game controller down to have like just lose all of your experience when you die. Right.
Totally.
Like that is just a frustrating part of the game to me. And it's not something that I would ever advocate as like be removed from this type of game necessarily, just because like I understand that the explicit purpose of it is to make death have consequences at all points, at all times, to constantly be making you worry about yourself, which is unique in amongst games, given that so often you just run headfirst in feeling like you're invincible in a game. And this basically says, hey, there are consequences if you're going to do that. And I appreciate
this game says slow down.
Yes. Yeah. And I appreciate that about the Souls games. It just also means that like, I tend to get frustrated with them more quickly and
totally
don't finish them as a result, right?
Yeah.
This game, I think, so far has indicated to me that there's a lot of reasons why that might it might stick with me longer, which is basically like the open world allowing you to just choose what you want to do. And the fact that there are these little mini, even already early on, these little mini caves that you can go in and they're like a contained little challenge. And if that frustrates you and you're dying on it, well, then you just like need to pick up the souls that you dropped and leave, right? Like the fact that you have that option is really cool in this. So I'm excited to play more of it. It doesn't necessarily feel like it. I agree with Lucy that I think it is more accessible, but I also think it is like absolutely a Souls game, right? And like 100%. If you dislike parts of Souls games, like fundamental parts of Souls games, they're probably not going to be like any better for you here.
it's like the avenue to it is more straightforward, but at the same time it's still an avenue into a Souls game,
right? Yes. Yeah. And again, I'm not like putting down Souls games, it's just that like I know this about myself, that eventually that sort of thing will make me kind of just bounce off of it or not give it the time it really deserves. The most one I played was Demon's Souls when it first came out, and then Dark Souls 3 I played all the way through, I believe. And that was like, that's kind of like my general experience with the genre. I've played others, just not a ton.
Yeah. The one thing I will say, Tom, about your point about losing the souls and the frustrating, like demoralizing aspect of it, I used to have to deal with that. Like, I've played all the souls but 3. I know I'm going to get crucified in the comments because I skipped 3. There's too many other things that year. Anyways, I'm going to go back and play it. I have it on my system. It's in the backlog. But the one thing I had to adapt for all the previous Souls games is, as I got like better, like not even before I got better, is I just had to accept loss. Like, you just have to kind of accept that loss. When you lose those souls, you just kind of have to be like, eh, whatever. I'll just go farm some more. Like, as soon as you can kind of get into that mind state of like, nothing is permanent, like, it's just kind of like, I had some, I lost them, I'll get some more. It removes so much stress from my time playing these games. Like, because it's just a more chill, relaxing experience because I'm not worried about it. Like, does it hurt to lose 20 to 50,000 souls or runes? Yes, it hurts. It still hurts. But the way I look at it is there's so many opportunities in all of the Souls games to where you can go and farm back that amount of resource back. Like I've just finished replaying the Demon Souls remake, and one of the end bosses, it spawns like these like flying manatees, and they're super easy to kill, and you can respawn them super fast, and you net like, I think I was netting like 8 to 12K per run, and it was taking me all of 2.5 minutes. So it's like, if you look at it just like, it's like, okay, I lost those in this area, there'll be somewhere else I can farm these back later. It's not, and just kind of move on. It'll help a lot. And this isn't just like me, like, don't feel this way. It's just my advice to people who are trying to get into Souls games and do have an issue with when you lose all your stuff and like wanting to throw your controller and, you know, put the game down. So.
And I think that's great advice, especially for people who are getting frustrated by that. For me, what the result of that math is a little different, though, just because, like, I 100% understand that. And I think you're absolutely dead on. It's just also that I personally like a lot of different genres, and I try to play a lot of different games, and a lot of games are coming out and fighting for my attention at any given time. So for a game to say, oh, you died twice, so the last 3 hours of the game didn't actually happen, is like really, really frustrating in a way that I'm like, well, then I'm just wasting my time. And I know I'm like getting better and I'm learning the patterns and all that, but like, it is very difficult for me to justify spending time on a game that like could just erase my progress than if I could just be playing a different game that is a little bit like, and like making more tangible progress. And I understand that like just going and getting it back is like a totally valid option for people who are really falling into it. But just like, I try to play a lot of things. And so it like doesn't line up with how I play games personally a lot of the time. It's like, it's one of the reasons I fall off quicker.
Yeah, no, 100% valuable. Yeah.
And to both of your points, like, both Horizon and Elden Ring are very much positioned as like the only games you'll need to play all year. There is so much content, and it is like, if you are, you know, someone who has heaps of time to play video games, then that is a wonderful thing. But like, if you are like time stretched, like I am, or there are lots of games vying for your attention, I can definitely see where some of that frustration would come from. But like, Elden Ring for me is very much like, oh, I will be playing this all year. I'm not going to finish this.
Right.
I'm not going to finish this anytime soon. This is going to be like a slow burn. But also to Jada's point, you know, people should not be afraid also to use guides. Like, if you need to know where to farm something, just use a guide. It makes these games, honestly, I have no shame in saying that I have looked up so much already. Like, if you look at my phone, like 30 tabs are open, and they're all Elden Ring questions. Like, what do I do with this? Where is the best place to farm in this area? So, you know, like, that can really help as well if you are feeling frustrated.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, to what everyone's saying, for me, my Souls experience was, I tried Demon Souls on the PS3 and hated it. I tried Dark Souls and hated it. I tried Bloodborne and hated it because I could never get past the bosses. And then I tried Sekiro and couldn't get past anything, so I hated it too and put it down. It wasn't until I played Demon Souls the remake while I was streaming it, and while I had, you know, a couple dozen people helping me when I would get stuck or offering advice or doing those things, that I was able to push through and eventually get to the place where I was appreciating all of that. And, you know, obviously having people watch and help was a good incentive to it. But I think, like, Tom, totally to your point of, if it's a thing that gets frustrating, and it was frustrating for me for literally the first 5 times I tried to play Souls games, I do not blame anyone who bounces off that, especially because I do think, I think both Elden Ring is more approachable and somehow also not, because I feel like coming in with now Souls experience helped me so much in the early hours. Sure. Like, I immediately knew what to do with certain equipment, what to do with certain leveling, what to do with all that stuff. And there's light tutorialization here and light menu explanation, but a lot of it is still a mystery unless you look it up. And it's like, knowing that going in was so helpful, but I also think it is so easy to very much be pushed aside from this, because some people are going to, I think, see, oh, here's the main path that I need to go through. Here's Stormvale Castle that I need to go to. And you just keep hitting walls. And it is the game telling you, go check out the 30 other things we have for you to go do. But maybe someone doesn't want to do that when they think, oh, all those things could potentially kill me too. So like, I right. totally get where you're coming from in terms of like, mm-hmm. at a certain point for people, I think I completely understand wanting to bounce from an experience like that. If you feel like you can't push ahead.
Yeah.
I do think Elden Ring allows more avenues to be like, I'm stuck.
Definitely.
And in the past it was beat your head against the wall or go grind for 10 hours. Now it's like there are 10 other mystery dungeons for you to go explore, but you may not think to do that. You may not know to do that. You may be afraid to see what is out there, because it could also be very punishing. Like, I totally understand, I think, where everyone comes from in this, the discourse that happens around.
Oh, the D word. The D
I
word.
Said it.
It is. I just want to quickly say, you know, playing a Souls game is, but especially Elden Ring, it does require you to look at the way you play video games in a very different way. And just to Jada's point, like, accepting failure is not something we are generally encouraged to do in video games, because it's all about like moving forward, constantly moving forward, constantly gaining, constantly gaining. If you fail, it's a setback to your constant gains, right? And like, it is hard to adjust your brain in that way. It is also hard to adjust your brain to thinking, okay, the main path is not, I'm not ready for the main path yet, even though the game is like funnel, well, not that Elden Ring funnels you at all, but like, for people who are looking for the sort of main path, they can find it pretty easily, but they're going to hit that wall. So it's just very much like adjusting the way that you look at the way that you play games, really.
Yep. I'll talk a little bit about that later when I do a breakdown for the Tree Sentinel fight. But yeah, totally, nice. 100%.
For sure. But yeah, it is one of those things where like I think if I were not playing this game, like, I've played a decent chunk of those 30 hours in co-op. My girlfriend's actually been playing it. I have a few friends I've been playing with. And I think that has, but again, granted, even something like co-op, it works better in this game than I think it has in the past. It's still an arcane experience of literal magic that you need to figure out to make sure everyone is aligned. You're all working properly together. It's not like you just go into a lobby and sync up. You have to do certain things and have certain items and all that sort of jazz. So it is like, there are layers to it that where people feel like they need to bounce from a Souls game. I completely understand, because I was very much that person for over a decade. And I think like, I totally get it. I think for those who are loving the game, I also see where everyone's coming from it, from that love. And so it is one of those complex things where I would never tell someone who is hitting that wall, feeling like the game isn't respecting their time, to be like, well, you're just playing it wrong. Cause you're not, you're playing it the game you, the way you want to be playing. And I like, that is fine. And so, yeah, I very much understand it from both sides. And I want to say that this also doesn't even get into the realm of when it comes to accessibility and you know, Souls games and all of that. And rather than dive into that, I do just want to point people to, I forget if it was up on the last time I was here, but we had a wonderful piece from a freelancer named Grant Stoner, who put up a piece about how often when Souls games come out, people are like, well, these games are too hard, just put an easy mode in, and how people in the accessibility communities are asking for so much more than an easy mode, and how an easy mode doesn't really describe what they're aiming for in terms of wanting more people to be able to play Souls games, and how it deals with game design theory and options and, you know, all these little extra and important things that can be put into game design that are more than just, oh, well, the enemies take more, or they're easier to take down now. It's so much more than that.
And also, just like, Grant has just quickly, Grant has actually said that Elden Ring has made some really big advancements in accessibility.
Awesome.
And he has had a chat with Steve Saylor, who's also on Podcast Beyond before. So please go check them out talking about Elden Ring and its approach to accessibility, because you know, by all accounts, it's a really good step in the right direction. It's a much more accessible game.
Yeah, I think that to actually remembering now what something is, I believe it was Steve tweeted actually that when I was talking about accessibility earlier, I was meaning approachability, right? Which
of course,
two different things. So I misspoke there.
Yeah, no, I totally thought that's what you meant there, but I appreciate you clarifying. But yeah, it's I think for everyone who's getting sucked into this world, it's going to be exciting to talk about the secrets and things that we are all, you know, discovering at different paces. It's going to be an interesting one to talk about throughout the year. But to before we go on too long, I do want to also focus on Horizon as well. Came out, and obviously we talk a lot about it in our spoiler-free review discussion, and we'll, you know, talk about it more in the future. I did want to jump to Lucy and Tom as well, since you haven't gotten a chance to speak about it either. Tom, I did want to just briefly start with you, because you texted me last night and you mentioned how you had beaten it. So I just wanted your quick thoughts on it now that you've beaten the game.
I rolled credits on it last night. So I came into this game. I've talked about this, I believe, on Beyond before. I played the first few hours of Horizon Zero Dawn 4 times because I just like kept going at it and not really being into it and bouncing off of it. And like I never even made it to the proving, right, as like that first sort of initial thing, because I just like wasn't enjoying it very much.
Yeah.
So I went into this game and I said, you know what, I want to go into this game as just the experience of like what happens if you just go in blind. And I didn't look up any story before or anything like that. And I enjoyed it a lot, but I don't think I enjoyed it maybe nearly as much as a lot of other people did. I'm glad I beat it. I had a lot of fun with it. It's absolutely gorgeous. The combat is really, really fun. The voice acting and the characters and the writing are like really great. One of the things that shocked me about it is that even like the random NPCs on quests that you're going to see talk to once and never see again feel like living, breathing people in a way that most games don't do. So I was really impressed with all that, and I'm really glad that I played it all the way through to the end. But yeah, the open world just sort of got a little uninteresting to me after a little while. I did the sort of main side quests tied to all the main characters you meet, but I didn't do many of the errands, right? I didn't do many of the other little side quests that were just like, this person is missing in the forest. And I like was like, I don't care. Like, it was a lot of that stuff sort of washed off my back. Mm-hmm. But like, generally speaking, I really did enjoy it. And I'm glad I beat it.
I think what's good about the main path of the game, too, is that if you're not enjoying that side stuff, like I know for a lot of people, some of the outpost taking out things can be a little more boring. Some people love the relic ruins, some don't. There's other side quests as well.
Those are cool little puzzles.
Those are really fun. But I do think just to like you playing in that way with just focusing on the story, the game doesn't really punish you in any way. Like, it levels you up at a pretty good pace.
Yeah.
And even just doing a couple side quests in there that are related to those characters, you're at level. I don't really feel like I ever felt underleveled, even if I was mainlining the quest for a bit.
No, definitely not. It's not a very punishing game in that regard. It feels like it wants you to be able to beat it.
For sure, unless you're playing on ultra hard like Jada is.
Sure, yeah, sure.
I've been on the normal difficulty. I've been level 50 max level for the last like 20, 30 hours, and I still get one shot by Thunderjaws. So there's no such thing as over leveling on the higher difficulty.
That's
the
fair.
Highest difficulty.
That's
very
fair. Yeah.
And Lucy, I want to hear your thoughts. Obviously, you reviewed the original Horizon Zero Dawn for us. You didn't review Forbidden West, of course, but we were, you know, talking before we've been able to have you on the show of it. So now that you've, I assume, played a little bit more since we last spoke, but how are you feeling in general about
it? Yeah, I mean, I think I'm sitting at the same place as Tom. I have not finished it, but I have played a fair chunk. You know, I've swung wildly in this game and continue to swing wildly between absolutely loving it and finding it grindy, a little, not grindy as in like, you know, we're forced to grind, but just a little bit repetitive. And you know, sometimes I feel myself sort of playing it and like absolutely not paying attention to what I'm doing whatsoever. Just very much going through the motions of like, I should probably do the side quest, but not really, you know, not being sucked in enough to the world and to the, you know, the purpose, Aloy's purpose. I think part of that is I am finding and this is a very much a personal thing, because I know some people absolutely love it, but like I'm finding the very like hardcore sci-fi story where you have to talk to someone and there are like 50 dialogue options and you kind of have to exhaust them all, or you feel compelled to exhaust them all, I'm finding that to be a bit of a slog. Like the story itself, I'm just finding rough. not again. That's a me thing. Like I think some people really love that hard sci-fi stuff. For me, I find it boring. At one point, like I wanted to screen grab this dialogue option where I was like, it was some side quest, and like one of the dialogue options was your daughter's seeds. And I was just like, I suddenly realized I hadn't been paying attention at all. I had no idea what the daughter's seeds thing was about. Like, I was just like, oh, this is tedious. So, you know, with that said, I absolutely think that the machines themselves continue to be just so outstanding. The way that they move, the way that they look, the way that you fight them. I am still getting real Jurassic Park / The Lost World vibes playing this game, which is what I felt playing the first. And to me, that's why I love these games so much, is it's just that sense of discovery when you see this giant thing and realize it's coming for you. You know, I love that. I love the thrill of that. And you know, I do love traversals a lot better. I was a little disappointed at first at the way that Aloy was kind of not as free when it came to her climbing. Like it still feels very like a set path. But you know, that only really bothered me in the first couple of hours. Now I find it, I think it works. And especially with the shield wing, I think is fantastic. And I love using that.
Shield wong every day.
It's great. It's a great game. I think that, you know, it is very interesting. I can't help but compare Elden Ring and Horizon because one feels focus tested to the nth degree, which is Horizon, and one feels like one person made it, which of course is not the case, which is Elden Ring. You know, they're very different games, but they do what they do very well. If you know what I mean.
I think they're going for different types of open world experiences
and also going for different types of audiences, right? Like, and I'm realizing that maybe I'm a little more Elden Ring than I am Horizon Forbidden West. But at the same time, that's a personal taste. I think it's great. Like, and again, there are moments that I'm just like, this is incredible. So I live for that in video games.
I'm so glad you mentioned the Jurassic Park reference. I literally had a fight where I had overwritten a snap maw. And I was fighting like some grazer or like fanghorns or something like that. And no, it was leap lashers, it was the kangaroos. And they were literally jumping at me. And my snap maw came from off screen and snapped it with its mouth. And so I literally cut it to that T-Rex biting the velociraptor sound. Mm-hmm. I will tweet it out after the show for people who want to see it. But yes, it is amazing. I totally 100% agree that these are two different. They're going for two different types of audiences. Mm-hmm. I'm about 80 hours in to Horizon. I'm about 70% total completion. This is just like doing all the side quests, finding all the collectibles, everything like that. And I love it. It's really weird. I generally don't like the very checklisty, go find all this. What's this question mark over here? Go find this. But I feel like every single thing I've done in Horizon has just been so captivating to me that I'm excited when a new question mark pops up on my map. I'm excited. I'm like, what is this going to lead to? There's some real standout characters. There's some really amazing set piece moments. I love getting to these gorgeous visuals and just spending 30 minutes in photo mode. That's part of why my game clock is at 80 hours, because I'll sit there and rotate poses and the time of day and all the other filters. It's just so great. The world is so alive. One thing I will say to Tom's point of like these like one-off throw characters that you're not going to see again. There are a good chunk of them that you'll find back in the camps close to where their quests are. So definitely if you want to see kind of like check in, if you've got time, like maybe go check one of those campsites, because you might have like extra dialogue just to kind of like an epilogue kind of their side quest story, which is really cool.
that I think a lot of people might miss out on. And it's totally fine if you don't care about those types of things. But it's this game is so character driven that I love going in and checking in on the NPCs of this world, because it's just it's a joy for me. I'm really loving Horizon. The only thing I'm disliking is when the game penalizes you for not playing the way they want you to play. And this is like kind of in the arena or the hunting grounds and stuff like that. Like, I get there's special objectives and stuff like that, but like the arena, that very first Slitherfang challenge where you have to use these four specific weapons, I was like, I hate this. I don't like the I don't like the warrior bow. I do not like the bolt blaster. I do not like these weapons. I like my bow. I like my bomb slinger. I like the shredders. But these other ones, when they force me to use those, I get so frustrated because I was like, I just do not enjoy using these. So I feel penalized at those times. So
getting locked into those can definitely be a little frustrating. You're absolutely right. And Lucy, to your point as well, I think like I really liked that story pivot, but I think for some people it absolutely will not land, and that's completely fine because it does take a hard turn in a way that, like, if that's not what you're in the Horizon world for, really may not drive, and I totally understand that. So yeah, that's definitely something for those who are playing through to know. But other than that, I think, Jada, if it's all right with you, we might have to hold on to, because we're actually out of time, hold on to the trophy tip for next week. But in the meantime, thank you to all of you for joining me for this week's episode. I think we've mentioned it a bunch already on the show, but if you haven't, please go check out Max Scoville's Kit Bash Creatures. He did the wonderful Pot Friend from Elden Ring, and it's so good. Max is just incredibly talented with those. They're so amazing, so great. Go check that series out if you haven't already. And also, please go check out all of our Horizon and Elden Ring coverage in general. Post launch, we're still doing a lot. Lucy and I can attest to that. There are plenty of pieces we're still editing. There was a bunch of post launch Horizon stuff that's already been up, including big changes, little details, some explainers.
Ending explains
for those out there, and then also Elden Ring explainers and details and things like that. So please look forward to all of that stuff and check it out if you haven't already. But before we go, anything else that you want to plug, Tom? I'll start with you.
I reviewed Far Changing Tides, which is the sequel to Far Lone Sails, so go check out that review. I didn't like it quite as much as the original, but I really loved the original, so that's a high bar for me.
That's right. I still need to check out the original, but I do want to play that series. It looks really beautiful and, like, kind of chill in a nice way.
Yes.
Lucy, anything else on the features end that I'm forgetting that we should be touting?
No, but Jada, I will want your trophy tip before. I am not going to be on Beyond for a hot second, even though I haven't been on Beyond for a hot second, because we're about to have a baby next week.
Congratulations!
Yes!
Congratulations. When I say we, I mean my partner and I am not pregnant, she is. And yeah, that's happening. So I am hoping that, you know, during his sleep time, I'll be able to get some Elden Ring in, and please send me all your tips because I want to.
Oh, and also I'll tell you guys, I rolled a healer on purpose in Elden Ring to help introduce newcomers to the game. So if you need help, let me know and I will join your game and just heal you to help keep you alive so you can still get the glory of landing. I will not take final hits on bosses. You have to do that yourself, but I will heal you so you have more opportunities to do that. So
you are a saint, goddammit.
That's a good amazing partner. Well, with that said, thank you so much to the three of you for joining me for this very fun episode. You can find us all on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush, Jada's at Jada_Rena, Lucy is at Luce O'Brien, and Tom is at Tom R. Marks. Thank you all again for joining me for this episode. Thank you to Red, our producer, for making the show happen behind the scenes. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching and sending in emails for if you have been. Please remember you can do that and I'll actually see them this time. Please send them in and we'll read some on the show in future weeks. But that's going to do it for us this week. We hope you're doing well. We hope you're staying safe. And as always, beyond.
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 Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics, and sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.